Hello. I'm so thrilled that we have Tsutong as our final guest in this 12-part artist, anthropologist contributor series, Fieldworks. So, Tsutong Lee is a conceptual artist, and her participatory projects integrate her anthropological research and political activism. In her work, she's examining how one can survive, manipulate, and regain the autonomy of political identities. Her work focuses on the hegemony of Chinese Sinocentrism, the trauma of modernity, and what she calls the current epistemological injustice. I love the way she describes her approach to her work. She describes it as surfing, surfing with performances, with web art, installation, fictional and experimental films, and all in all, her work plays along the borders of contemporary art, academia, and crucially, politics. I think it's so exciting to have her speak as our last guest because she's really walking that line between art and anthropology and considering how art as a method can test, she says, the contemporary form of art, technology, and authorities. So, welcome. We're going to pass over to Sotong to give her initial presentation. You're now a co-host, so please continue. Over to you, Sotong.
Thank you, Maxim and Jen, for opening the conversation. I'm going to start with a bit of introduction of the one of the show that me and Gabriel, which is another artist in ant art, was curating and is again going to be at the show again at the end of this year, which is called Sense Field. It's also an anthropology cross-disciplinary exhibition in Taiwan. And we are like super looking forward for like any future kind of connection and like connection and collaboration between an art or perhaps with a sense field. So and so I'm going to start with the introduction for my film, Riding the Tongue Light. And now I'm going to share screen. Just a second.
And just a little reminder whilst you're there, Tsutong, it's super helpful if you can describe some of the visual elements of your work that you're screen sharing so that the radio or the podcast audience can follow along. Thanks.
Thanks. A great reminder. So could you see like what's now showing on the screen? Also, what's now showing on the screen is one of the screenshots that shows the characters in Riding the Time Lag. For example, the camera person or the interviewees, and also their age. The reason why showing that their age is because I think like in the film, I construct the time that seeing the time as a relative concept of not being identified as, for example, 1919 BC or like in different kind of time measurements in different nations, but to feel and have that history in our own body or in our own personal history. So that's why like I also choose the title Writing the Time Lag, which is like we are all personally like writing this history and time lags in our bodies. So for the film itself, in order to reveal unheard voices in colonial history and to balance the gender-biased image production process, the film is made with interviewees through a participatory process and completed by an all-female film crew. All the 50-millimeter shots are operated or directed by the interviewees. In Taiwan, democratization and modernization were majorly pushed by the international political tension between China and America. Starting with the indigenous woman and queer activists' marriage and personal romance, writing a time-like visit one by one story of Amis woman activists, Binu Yumai, young activist, Taiwan political workers who works in America, in DC, indigenous shamans or Han cultural workers who work in indigenous community. And through all these stories gradually reveals the current struggles in indigenous justice. And the correlation between democratization and the reinvention of the indigenous gender labor tradition, and how globalization forms hierarchies in tribes, in communities, and in Taiwan, and submerge the ways of seeing in the film. So me as a part of Taiwan's new generation artist, I also have like foreign study background in my foreign study background is in film, and my I also have like involvement with the Sunflower Movement in Taiwan in 2014. Like all this experiences had made me interest and focus on Taiwan's ethnic and gender identity history. So from 2016, I started my field research in politics. And this field research experience, I went to Taiwan's legislator office, like political campaign, and even using undercover identity to sneak into PRC's party member union, like so People of Republic of China's union. So I participated, I also participated in training in DC to become advocates for Taiwan's bill in America's Congress, and later come back to Taiwan and joined several protests and even organized protests. So through this field research or through this witnessing process, I can like feel the complexity of Taiwan's post-colonial politics, and especially this kind of international power struggle between Taiwan, China, and America. I study in School of Art Institute of Chicago and now in MIT. And I really could feel this kind of huge gap between the America privileged institutions and the everyday struggle of the indigenous communities. So for writing the Time Lag, it's an experimental documentary, an essay film made after this political encounters. As there is never a simple digital me between oppressor and oppressed, majority and minority, tradition, modern, memory, history, corporal, spiritual, literal, oral, I use the camera and the meta frame of image in the film to symbolize and bridge this oppositional conflicts and relations. For me, writing the Time Lag is a medium for people using cameras to write through the gaps and lags in contemporaneity. So here follows another picture, which you can see now that there is a man in the middle, and I have the camera, and behind him there is like two architecture, two building. Right, the one building at the right is the Balaguan, which is the gathering place for Puyuma's the men in Puyuma's community. So I always like to start my introduction for writing the Time Lag with this picture, because it was like one of the chance that really transformed my art research or art creating experiences. So in the middle, this man is called Gao Mingzhi. He was an activist from Puyuma community. And he introduced me to his community. And at the time, I saw there was an artist who are carving their ancestor's pillar for their community. And I don't know, I just like feel so much at the time, because I realized that the artists who are carving that pillar, he has his audiences. And his audiences is his people, and also his ancestors, his ancestor spirits. But in contrast of my art creating, who's my audiences, or who are the audiences for contemporary art? The question could, for me, even lead to like, who brought contemporary art to Taiwan, and how creative activities are strategically or being forced to transform into this nowadays form. So many times I think like who can like my art in dialogue with? I think like when I was an M study in, for example, like America institutions, when saying contemporary artists and putting contemporary artwork into like in dialogue, sometimes we are like saying you can like situate your art in dialogue with perhaps like Andra Fraser, Hans Hakel, Sophia Kahl, but like, and also for example, for Gao Mingzi, I think for Gao Mingzi and the artists in his community, I think the people that he was in dialogue with, it's very clear. It's his community, his people, his ancestors. But I feel that there is like, it is more of a complex question for me as a Taiwanese artist. Like our Taiwanese identification, Taiwanese artists, like our identification are built upon national, especially national identification, are built upon layers and layers of colonial history. So, and also we are ourselves are also the colonizer of the indigenous people on the island. So, so when thinking about like who's my people, like am I trying to talk to Chinese, to indigenous people, or to Taiwanese, and like who is this complex mixed Taiwanese community who even don't have like a very single sort of identification or a single sort of ethnic politics or ethnic nationalism. It is like also very confusing for me, and it is also the starting point of like why I decided to continue this work on thinking about like what's my culture and how like culture itself it's being become a kind of like object of ontologically and to being like observed by others. Yes. So I often like introduce this kind of situation with these two pictures. Like at the left is the ancestor pillar made by Paiwan community from a Zingular family. And the right is another artwork made by the indigenous contemporary artist in Taiwan called Papa Balon. And at this right pillar, you can see like there is a lot of symbols that is like the cross or the Christian or different kind of religion symbols. And he made this pillar indicating that that indigenous people could also embrace all this global idea, this global symbols and continuing this path. So I think like this is a switch and this kind of a kind of like transition for lots of people who are facing this struggles or between the tradition and the contemporary. Is it like 10 minutes now? Because like the later one
Don't
icon.
worry. I think your timing is okay. If you'd like to say a bit more, please do, since it's since we're listening to you. That's great. We will wrap it up and let you know gently if it gets a bit too long. But don't, you're fine now.
Okay, let me know like when it's about time. So like after the field research, I feel mainly I could like start to deal the problem in art and for different sets of questions. First one is about the authorship, because for example, the artist I know in the Puyuma community, he was said that his artwork is not made by himself. It's an artwork that it's made by ancestors' spirits, and he was just realizing it. And I was, as a artist who is like more coming from the contemporary art system, I was like really shocked, because it seems like people around me and is really tied to the idea of like the work as like my baby, and I am the sole owner of the work, and so this it's also like lead to like later I was very devoted to decentralized movement and other kind of more like technological software movement that it's open resources, because like everyone could access to the content that you contribute, but there is like no a definite relationship between you and your work. And I think like that's a very smart and different set of idea comparing to what I was familiar with. A second set of idea is to remanufacture the audiences, which is, for example, like my audiences would, well, in more of the contemporary art context, I think my audiences would be the person who go to the museum, visit the exhibitions, and especially perhaps people visit MoMAs or MoCA. And I met lots of artists who have practiced that their art audiences is not in this kind, or not even living species. There is an artist called Gao Junhong in Taiwan who have an artwork which he produced a drawing on a wall of a ruin. So like actually nobody or rarely there won't be people visit that wall, but that artwork was being exhibited to the mountain ghost and the spirits living there. So I think that it's also a very interesting and different set of idea on how we could rethink and remanufacture our relationship with the audiences and who is our audiences. Process as the purpose, this is like this third set of idea is because when I was doing writing a time lag, and especially it was like with, I insist of like using all female film crew. And I realized when we are doing, for example, when we are doing film, for example, like when I was little, what I see, what is a good film, it's something like Hollywood, like, you know, there's like lots of bombing, lots of in like high quality image, like very, maybe like using very sophisticated camera equipment, but all this equipment also may need like huge labor force. So when I was like doing writing the time lag, there is some of the image I said that it would be great if I could use drone. I would like to have like image that is top down in the air. And at the time there was no woman drone operator in Taiwan with license. So we decided then we don't use drone. And then in another set, we want to have a special like lightning in our scene, and there is also like no woman in for lightning, so for light. So at the time we also like decided not to use that kind of light in the film. I think the result is that we don't actually expect, like we first have the crew and then have the image, instead of we have the image in our head and then have the crew. If we have the image first, then I would like and would have a crew that probably have lots of men and like will duplicate the traditional way or the major way of like doing a film production, more like Hollywood kind, perhaps. But when in doing writing the time lag, I see like the film it's coming from these people, the image it's and the quality it's coming from this community. Lastly is animate and ritualize, which means I encounter also like in later research, I built relationship and encounter many indigenous artists, and I find one of way for them to decolonize art is to have like people gathering together. For example, they are doing theater production or participatory production, they will adopt their rituals in their artwork, and sort of like creating a gray area or blurring this boundary between this contemporary theater and their ritual practices. So when thinking about this set of idea on animate and ritualize, also I realize like how in a way we are thinking to trying to like demystify a lot of things, especially when we are doing any kind of knowledge production or even when doing artworks. So I would adopt this ritualized and animate ideas when I was, for example, like doing film production. So to mystify and have different kind of vibe again in our community. And the reason why I choose this picture, the current, like now the picture that is showing is an eye on the screen, is because I think like that it's something that it's like the core of it, like how we see things, how we see things as object or just see things as culture itself as an and also like with this kind of like really top-down authoritative gaze, and how could we just decolonize or decentralize this kind of gaze is something that I am working on.
Wonderful, thank you so much. And I know that we could keep talking much more about all the things. I have questions already, but I would like to throw open to the floor in case anyone else has a burning question. And as usual, also you can, there are two, you know, or three of us now hosting, so you can also put some questions in the chat if they come up as you're going along. If there isn't either a hand raise or someone just unmuting yourself and speaking, then I will go ahead and ask some of my questions, if that's okay. Yeah, okay, great. I mean, so just I'll outline my questions perhaps, so you might want to connect them, I'm not sure. Because in the end, particularly this third idea around process is the purpose, kind of does that, I think. And what it does, I think, is make the connections between art and politics and some of these smaller questions which I have around, I mean, not necessarily smaller, but not just authorship and ethics, but perhaps what a queer or feminist aesthetic might be that emerges from the ethics that, that are, you know, that from that practice. I noticed, for example, obviously an all-female crew, but also some other really interesting choices around, you know, a single lens for some of the stuff that, in, that might relate to light or might relate to a perspective that I thought were interesting. But my first big question is, a lot of the time there are these debates in the UK or in Europe around the borders of art and politics. And I thought you'd be a really interesting person, given the specificity, but also the breadth of your background and interests and work. Do you consider your artwork as political work? Or is it, as you say yourself, I think, that you're interested in how art might serve or help transform politics? I mean, that's a complex set of thoughts. I have my own view, but I would love to know where you are on that. And apologies if you can hear the noise in my background. I'll leave it there.
That's really an awesome question, and I would like struggle with this question for a long time, because like when I started to participate in various movements, I always like question myself, like what can really an artist do within politics. And many times I have to take off my artist hat within this protest, because like artist seems like not a very useful identity when like doing politics. And then recently, gradually, I find more of my answer, and like I feel more confident thinking like my artwork could be a political work or a work of politics. One of my recent work, it's called Furconomy, and very thankful, thankfully, the curator of the Furconomy project, Yukiko, is also here at the Zoom, the project Furconomy at the time was forming an alternative democratic council. To invite different person, representer, for example, from LGBTQ movement, from indigenous movement, the researchers in marine biology, etc., and have this council to discuss the question if that is how to buy 1 milliliter milliliter of South China Sea. So when doing that, lots of people who are participated have prior experiences difficulties in their area. For example, there was representer from environmental group who are dealing with one of the problems called like Asian cement company problem, which is a company who are excavating cement in an indigenous community. So they often face this kind of distrust feeling in their meetings between the government, the indigenous community, the environmental group, and etc. And it's hard for them to facilitate. And when they come to this art project and using kind of like more experimental way on thinking of a more hypothetical question, such as how to buy a 1 milliliter of South China Sea. They're kind of like getting something different from that process. And I think like from that artistic process, they could maybe I hope like inspire or change a little when they are doing their own negotiating work in their real life in their group.
Great, thank you. Thank you for that really practical and deep answer. I want to not say more because I could, in fact, even about concrete in Asia. but let's see if anybody else would like to jump in. Shanin, Madeleine, please.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for this exciting presentation. I actually had a thought that is quite close to Jen's, because I had to think about Rancière when you were talking and his idea of the distribution of the sensible, where he said that actually both the arts and the politics are kind of consubstantial, like having this same affordance maybe to distribute the sensible and kind of distributing social roles and norms and stuff like that. So I was wondering, this is quite a theoretical concept, but from an empirical point of view, would you agree that the being of politics and the being of arts is kind of related?
Well, if I say yes, would it be too just like a conventional answer?
Yeah, it does. Well, you have to say a little bit more because it's all about the nuance. Please tell us.
Well, yes. Unfortunately, art and politics are really related. I think like a lot of artists would think and would hope their art are not related to politics or not serving for politics, hoping that our work wouldn't be a propaganda tool for politics or any kind of particular idea. And perhaps also hoping the materiality of an artwork could have even like more transcendental consequences that beyond just politics. So I think that it's one of the major differences, or maybe like one of the debate when people are saying like art should not combine or like discuss together with politics. But just like for me, my personal experiences is yes, I want to do art that it's like not political at all. And then I suddenly find out like, but what's my culture? Like when I want to create and I am like creating from my culture, from any kind of visual references I know or cultural references I know. And these cultural references are like deeply enrooted in this history in Taiwan, in this colonial history or colonizing history in Taiwan. So for me, I feel I have this obligation or responsibility to reveal that because like love is something that I love so much and something that I really want to create. And so I really want to reveal this part to my audiences.
Thank you very much for this answer. So it's quite a complicated topic, and there is so much written on it. And I think it's true that Rancière has this wonderful way of making it quite concrete and say that and it has to do also with the bombing and the HD, that the high definition cameras that you mentioned, right? That there is a kind of these things are not evenly distributed, and maybe also it's interesting to think that the audience that you will get in the end is also from this kind of image that you will get, that the image that you get from the crew will not be the same as if you were doing this kind of Hollywood movie, because the sensible is distributed in such a way that maybe part of your target audience politically, like that you would be interested in addressing, would like to have bombing and would like to have some kind of funny, funky action going on, you know? And maybe the elite will like this, what you do, because it is very much up to what they know and what they are already expecting. And so I was wondering about the role of humor and the role of taking things lightly, which is also so important in this kind of situations. Just to give a little bit of context before I let you answer, I worked for a long time with and about an artist that is called Jonathan Mezer, and he works with very political matters, but he does it in a very weird way, not being critical, just making fun of everything and saying, I'm just the object of the thing happening. And by saying that, he quotes Hitler and saying like Hitler like was doing this as well, and it's kind of creating resistance by making things really weird and making and showing that this is actually the best way and the most efficient way to do it is to let things happen in a certain way, but always very strongly saying that humor is a very important criteria of felicity. And for now, you didn't address this so much, and I think this question of like how do you address, you know, this audience who is, you know, is not going to be touched by your aesthetics because you want to address it in a different way. So yeah, my question is becoming very entangled, but I think you have an answer for that. Thank you.
Yeah, I wish I could also use humor in my artwork too, but I am not, I feel I'm not very talented at it. I've tried it. Yes, I could have more practice this aspect.
No, we are still very open for questions of the audience, and they can be all sorts of questions. We're really eager to have your eye. It can be, we have artists working with camera here as well. We have Savi here and Pekka. We have also artists working on, well, we have different kinds of people that we're used to try to challenge and ask them to ask questions. So please take the mic. Or maybe Jen, if you have a supply.
Yes, I can.
Endless supply of questions and remarks. So please, the concrete in Asia.
Okay.
In China. I can make a comment. Pekka was
Pekka.
So yeah, so the people you work with, so they have used the camera and they have the like their perspective. And my experience also that has been mainly with young people and in Mexico, Virarica people, for instance, that they were kids and actually when they were playing and they wanted to tell their story to the Sami people in very north. So their idea was that they wanted to show how different we live here. And actually the film they make, the short one was, it was called that We Are Sweating a Lot. And so that was the main point actually to tell to the people in the north that how the climate is different. And actually the way they were doing it was that they were showing their faces and they were showing a flower and then one of their friends was taking a sip of water and then they went to swim. And I think that it was so kind of, how would I say, even a haptic way that I would never, you know, imagine to present their culture in my country. So I guess you have that kind of, I'm curious if you have had kind of opening eye experiences with the material that you have worked.
Well, would you, would you more specifically describe your question on what do you mean by opening eye? I mean, like when you said they have
kind of got the way that actually presents something very, you know, familiar, and actually somebody else is presenting it completely different. Maybe because we are used to seeing the films, so we know how to, you know, make the representation of something. But actually, the way these kids made it, it was very different. So that's what my curiosity is, that if you did have, with your the people you work, kind of similar situations that.
Yes. 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 I think. Yeah. We kind of encountered the similar situation, actually. But in a different way, because like most of the people that I interview with are activists. So most of them are actually more wanting to advocate or tell their problems verbally than shooting an image. So when I said that it would be great if you can like you will be the director and like shooting your sequence, and then most of them want to have like a very interview form. Like they want to be like being interviewed, and I ask the questions and they have the answers. So the result is actually, in contrast, not that visually pleasing, I think, like because it's most of them are in the interview setting. But later in the later interviews, I decided to kind of try to like have different practice. So I would have more practiced or more materials before they started the interview. Like for example, like setting the camera, and they let them play with the camera first and kind of let them feel what a camera can do, rather than just like putting there with a tripod and like they being interviewed. And so this kind of problems are like less in the later process.
And I'm now participating on my phone because I had internet connectivity issues. So I forgive me if I missed anything, or if I'm asking, just say I've already answered this, but because I missed, unfortunately, Jeanette's question. But I really wanted to come back to the question of audience, but I wanted to bring it into dialogue with a more difficult question, a more interesting kind of personal question on some level, which is about the privilege that is embedded in those questions around audience and arts audience, like who are the type of people that go to see contemporary art. And I just wanted to mention that I've had a small work event in Taipei, in Taiwan. I've spent some time there. And I have a friend who's also Taiwanese and is also educated. Her background was originally in like landscape design. And I noted that yours was agricultural economics, which I thought was really interesting. And then through education, you've traveled to the States. And I think for her, she traveled to Europe. And I think there's something about privilege and power and the possibilities of transnational identities, you know, that come with being an artist and all this stuff, which is the difficult part, I think. But you also raised some really cool questions about arts audiences potentially being, you know, non-human mountains or spirits or other kind of animate bodies. And so I just wanted to ask you a kind of really multiple, manifold, complex question around who your art is for and how those privileged experiences and those educations and the money and the connections that are behind all of that also serve to be complicated or questioned, or like where you stand in relation to all of those things, which is a huge question, I know, but I'm just really interested to hear a bit more about your perspective in terms of the audience and your own privilege in relation to the bigger issues you're asking. If you don't mind trying in a few minutes.
This is a terrific question. So I can first answer very briefly by the example of writing the time lag. So like for writing a time lag, for me, it's still like work in progress because I'm finding money for translating the whole film into Amis language. So for me, it's definitely a struggle when doing the later editing, because I at the time I realized, like, when I was like having the camera, I probably have that invisible audiences in my head that presuming this audience is will be at museum. And then when I sitting in front of the editing table, I was thinking, okay, I want to contribute this film to the indigenous community, with the people that I encounter with. So there is like a lot of, it has encountered lots of audience problem. But eventually, I think when it is done, I hope that the whole, like, the language, the main language would be Amis language, and well, more like direct the work to audiences in Taiwan's indigenous community. Yes, for this transnational questions, the audiences. I think I kind of happened to at the face of re-question my artist identity because I was like holding this artist identity for a very long time. For like at the time I think, okay, I will be an artist for my whole life, something like I really want to create. And then in recent days, maybe perhaps like doing some exception and having this experiences within different discipline, then I start to like question this artist identity that I have held for so long, and for like this audiences, the particular audiences that I presumed that it was invisible in my head for such a long time. So for like later practices, I also feel I could have the energy and power even with the name of the artist outside or using this name, but I could like tell things or do things in different way with different audiences. For example, like audiences who are more actually in politics, which is maybe they are like barely going to the museums in their daily life or read any anthropological books in their daily life. But perhaps even with this artist hat, I could still say something with them. And yeah, I think that it's one of my resolution, like recent thoughts on this.
That's great, thank you. I think the approach towards making a film in an indigenous language is a very simple but also really powerful way of saying, hey, this brings almost like another lens into or another perspective to everything else that can be so you know, clever and complicated and artistic and aesthetic in different ways, but it really kind of positions you in an interesting way. And if we could, I'd love to talk more about that process of translation and of the indigenous politics in Taiwan, which I'm aware of a little, particularly in relation to some forest communities and so on. But that's for another day, maybe. I can't see, Maxime, I'm on my phone, so I can't see if anybody else is there asking questions, and I don't want to override them.
But it doesn't so, can seem I let so you but I'm interested over? As well. I'm very interested also in the question of indigeneity and like the native communities, because you said it also in the beginning, as an artist and contemporary artist, you also are in a position that is, okay, you have this other, you know, political power, China knocking at your door, but you are yourself in a position that is also not so clear. So like not so clear. It's obvious that, you know, that your people took the land from other people. So last time we were in Canada, actually. So there were Kate Hennessy and Trudy Smith, and they started by acknowledging the territory, which is something very commonplace to do in these academic communities there in Canada, saying, okay, I'm speaking from a land that is that was taken illegally from other communities, which is not that they will leave immediately and cease all activities because they are there and that's the way it is. But yeah, that's also kind of, it's a difficult question, but the question of, of China knocking at the door is also something that contributes to kind of change the balance there. So I was wondering, would have to hear a little bit more on that, please.
Particularly on China or on
On the complex conundrum of being between in this position that you are like, of being actually maybe on such an uncomfortable position, which is
that is like happening in everyday life. Of this uncomfortable position. But also like, I think one of the reason I decided to get involved with the indigenous studies or indigenous issues in Taiwan is because I think like Taiwanese in general is like really aware of like Chinese oppression. And most of the time we think of ourselves as the victim of this hegemony. But rarely do Taiwanese think that we are also the colonizer or for indigenous people in Taiwan. So I think for what I try to do, I guess, I think like ideally in my mind, if Taiwanese people could really reflect, like how could Taiwanese people expect Chinese to really expect us if we didn't sort out like how we eventually become actually an oppressor for others? So I don't know if that answers somehow or respond to this.
I'm not sure it's a question that can be answered, but thank you for trying. And
I think given the intersections that we've been seeing have been raised, and given the project of actually a really interesting and increasingly so project where decolonization is being coupled with other approaches, whether those are feminist, anthropological, anti-authoritarian, or whatever, as a project born of a European association with artists and anthropologists working in lots of different places and cultures, I think perhaps this is something we should attend to more thematically somehow, in a way, just give it some time and attention, and people can think on the questions that we've asked and raise within each particular work, and perhaps the next set of talks can raise the connections between works and ideas more collectively. That would be our hope, isn't it, Max? It's 3:01, so maybe it's time.
Yeah, we have this tradition to kind of get after 1 hour because we have this, it was very useful, I think, on the long run to keep these sessions really 1 hour. And we have a comment by Yukiko saying, being somebody is always political, and Tsutong is one of very few artists who is aware of it. I think it's a beautiful word to close. Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much, Tsutong Lee, for being with us as contributor to the exhibition and for today, for this talk. That was really wonderful. So I'd like to thank all of you who attended the talk
and mention us by way of advertising Pekka's upcoming exhibition installation, which she's invited us all to attend also in the chat. I'll just read it out quickly. The 5th of June is the first version of his big project at the Research Pavilion of Arts, University Helsinki. There will be a streaming live discussion. Please feel free, Pekka, to share the link with everyone and the Antart list. Fantastic.
Yeah, I will do it then when we will have it. Yeah, fine.
Wonderful. Great. I'll pass back to Max. Thank you, Max, for the closing.
Thank you very much. I don't have much to say. Thank you very much again. And see you soon. We will send you a new program, hopefully, in a couple of weeks or months, maybe, with new talks that will be coming to guide us on the road to Lisbon 2022. So thanks again, all of you, for... Thank you for the regular to the regulars for being so present, and thank you all the contributors for your good work. Thank you, Francisca and Anna Maria and Anna for all the good design and all the work that you provided around the exhibition and to these talks. That's really great work. Thank you so much, and I wish you a wonderful Friday evening. You all.
Yes. Wonderful. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.